Hey, I'm Stephen Hovatter, the lead minister at Central Church of Christ in Little Rock, Arkansas. Our goal as a church is to follow Jesus together. So we gather on Sunday mornings for Bible study at 9 a.m. and worship at 10:15 a.m. and you'd always be welcome to join us. To learn more, go to arcentralchurch.org. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you soon.
Good morning. I hope you're doing well today. It is the Sunday before Christmas. Christmas will be here this coming Wednesday. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that is here today that feels like I have a task list 100 pages long. I don't know if you feel like that. For us, you know, school got out on Friday. Our family then was neck deep in a wrestling tournament and other stuff on Friday and Saturday. And then we just came here. And so I feel like today after church, like Kelly and I are going to have a business meeting, you know, and we're going to have some details that are going to have to be like, okay, what is it that still is left undone? Anybody else feel that way? It's a season where we are preparing for Christmas. And we do that in all kinds of different ways. We do it by hanging stuff on a tree, and we do it by putting lights on the outside of our house. We do it by doing a little grocery shopping and then a little meal planning and a little travel planning. And we're trying to think about what it is that in this moment we still have left to do before that thing that springs on us on Christmas morning. And I don't know. I love that our world has, you know, this season where they acknowledge this holy day, even if they acknowledge it in the most, sometimes sacrilegious ways, being completely saturated by the consumerism of our world and totally boiled down to a bunch of sales and shopping. And all that stuff drives me nuts, but I at least appreciate that there's something in the air that says there is a marker date and it's important and you have things to do to get ready for it. The church has long used this season right before Christmas to think about what it means to prepare for the moment of Christmas and to think about what goes along with that. And so, you know, we have a very simple clock that we watch, some candles that are kind of counting down until the day. And we have other things that we do to kind of remind ourselves, certain songs that we sing, you know, verses that Stephen's never heard before that he has to remember the cadence to. Just be glad we don't do any frosty business or anything like that. We have other things like that that send us signals about what time it is, about what the season is. The season where preparing for Christmas not only reminds us of preparing for the day when we celebrate the birth of Christ into the world a long, long time ago, but remind ourselves too that the Christ who came will come again. And that we celebrate not just his entering into the world once, but that he is present in our world still in different and sometimes hidden ways, and that someday he will return in a definitive way. So preparing for Christmas is really about preparing for God's arrival. And perhaps it's just an accident, or perhaps it's providence, but we've been walking through the Gospel of Mark, and we've come to chapter 13 this week, which is all about preparing for God's arrival. Return to Mark 13 with me. We're going to be there. So it is a strange chapter to be preaching in some ways on the week before Christmas. This is what is sometimes called the little apocalypse of Mark. This is Mark's little apocalypse. And it contains some stuff that's, I don't know, maybe a little even disturbing. Talks of wars and rumors of wars There's a moment where he speaks about a desolating sacrilege that is being set up. And he talks about the suffering that could come in these days that are going to fall upon Jerusalem. All of that is wrapped up into this apocalyptic language of Mark. It kind of comes into two ways. It comes as Mark is telling us about Jesus's prophetic word against the temple and against what was the corruption of Jerusalem. But then as Jesus talks about it, you hear these shades of not just that work of Jesus, but of something that would come further in time. It's a long chapter, so we're not going to read it all at once, but I would like to read these first few verses with you, beginning in Mark 13, verse 1. As he came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones, what large buildings." And then Jesus asked him, "You see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." He was sitting at the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, and Peter and James and John and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will this be? And what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There'll be earthquakes in various places. And there'll be famines. And this is just the beginning of the birth pangs." Jesus goes on and speaks about some things about how they will withstand that moment. But read with me down in verse 24 and following. Read the rest of this chapter. "In those days, after that suffering, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven. The powers in the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory." It is sad. It is sad. "And then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as the branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows. Neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware. Keep alert. For you do not know when the time will come." It's like a man going on a journey and he leaves home. He puts his slaves in charge, each with his own work, and he commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. "Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come back, in the evening or at midnight or at the rooster's crow or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And so what I say to you, I say to everyone, keep awake." This is Mark's version of Jesus's warning to his disciples. First, about trouble that would come in Jerusalem, and then second, about what it means for him to come and arrive in our world, for what it means for Jesus to come and to initiate the great day of reckoning, of resurrection and judgment. And in this moment, Jesus tells his disciples, I think, a couple of things that are very, very important. And I think they're a good last word for us here in this season. Notice at the beginning that it comes, he tells his disciples, it begins by him just telling them, the occasion is that they come in and they've already heard him. They've seen him come into the temple and throw over the tables and all that stuff. They've heard him give kind of his prophetic word against those who are devouring the houses of widows and all that stuff. They know that Jesus isn't happy about everything that's happening in the temple. They already know that. And yet they come in and they walk in and they're like, man, Jesus, this place is really pretty. Isn't it magnificent? See how huge these buildings are. See how magnificent this building is. My jaw drops every time I read that because I cannot believe that they expect him to be impressed with what the temple looks like. They already know that Jesus is cleaning house in this space, that Jesus is calling the temple into account. He has initiated the reckoning that the temple is having to face in this moment. And yet Jesus here has his disciples as they're walking in, and man, they want to buy a t-shirt and a postcard. They want to show how happy, how impressed they are with what they see. Of course, Jesus is never impressed by the things that they are impressed by. He sees what not just is underneath there in the present, but Jesus sees what is coming for the temple. He sees that the things that look so impressive in that moment are going to fade away from importance. He sees that the building itself is going to be tossed around, leveled. Sure enough, that's going to happen. This is a really important prophetic word from Jesus, because within 40 years, okay, exactly what Jesus is prophesying is going to be fulfilled. It's going to be a moment when this place that seemed to be like an impressive fortress of righteousness is going to be ruined because they couldn't back down from this control fight that they had with the Romans. In that moment, after Jesus tells them not one stone is going to be left on another, it's all going to be torn down, Peter and James and John and even Andrew gets in on the business this time. They take Jesus, they find him by himself, and they want to know exactly when all this is going to take place. They want a sign. And I think I would want that too. I think I would want to know. Hey, can I go ahead and get that on the calendar, right? Can I know exactly where that is and how I need to respond? And maybe it's because what I can predict, I feel like I have a better chance of controlling. And when I find things that are unpredictable, I feel out of control. And I feel like I'm only able to respond and react, maybe even panic. You feel like that? Here, I think part of the movement is that Jesus' disciples, they still kind of want to be in charge. Only for Jesus to tell them in this moment, they're going to have to give up control. That one of the wildest things that he says in this prophecy is that the angels and even the Son or nobody else knows exactly when this is going to happen except for the Father above. And the challenge of that is that he's asking them to trust the timing of God. He's asking them to trust what it is that God is planning as the sovereign Lord over this moment. Peter, you don't have to know the date, because you're not in charge of what happens anyways. Notice that as the story, as he tells them about what's going to happen, he's not telling them how to take charge of the apocalypse. He's not telling them about how to be in control of what's going to happen when this turnover in Jerusalem takes place. He basically is going to say, have your bag packed, and when you see things going down, get out of Dodge. Well, that seems completely the opposite of what a Messiah might say about this coming arrival of a judgment moment. You would think that he'd be like, you know, pulling them in and getting the maps out. Okay, guys, here's the plan. Here's how we're going to take charge of Jerusalem. Here's how we'll make sure that the Romans are put in their place. Instead, he just says, boys, when it happens, you won't be in charge of any of this. You have really one job. Stay alert. Stay alert. And he says it several times in this section. He says, your translation may say something like keep awake or be alert or be awake or keep watch. Okay, all that is kind of this phrase that is like kind of a message to somebody on guard duty. Stay awake. Keep your alertness ready. And it kind of comes down to that last little parable at the very end of this chapter where he says, you know, nobody's going to notice the date, but it's going to come suddenly. And so your job is to be alert. Be doing what the master told you to do before he left the house. And be always ready. You know, the one thing that's sort of backwards about this season of preparing for Christmas is that we have a date on our calendar for Christmas, right? We know that all of those preparations that we're going to plan for this week, all of those things that we're going to try to do, I know I've got a deadline, right? I know that it's all got to be done by sometime early in the morning on Christmas Day. And I know exactly how that's going to unfold in that play. But I would remind you that on the Christmas way back when, hardly anybody got that kind of notice. That rather, Jesus came into a world that was totally caught off guard. Some shepherds in a field were summoned, some magi came from afar, and all of them were astonished to find Jesus not being celebrated by a huge crowd of people. Rather, in the spur of the moment, God's coming was in the world, almost in a world that didn't seem to notice. A few people got the memo. There was a man named Simeon who got to see Jesus, and we're told that he had been waiting for the consolation of Israel. There's a prophetess in the temple named Anna that's able to recognize the child in that moment. But everybody else is just reacting. Mary and Joseph have had their dreams, but they get very few details about the when and the where. Rather, it's a surprise attack, a secret invasion where the king of Israel comes in.